is incapable of giving consent, has a guardian or such. We also have in your packet the Dash 1 amendments. These are amendments from the requesters or proponents of the bill. The Dash 1 amendments basically clarify that this only applies to a person with a developmental disability, and not necessarily people who are in the mental health portion of the service delivery system. And as I understand it, people who, both the department and advocates in mental health, all basically concur that they would like this bill focused on just developmental disability. Thank you, Chair.
Also, coming at the stand is Jeff, is it Daly?
Yes.
And Molly Daly and Lane DeLoff.
Yes.
Okay, President Courtney.
Thank you, Chair. I'm not saying it's the Senate Health Policy Committee. Chair Cruz, I believe you stepped out for a minute. Senator Moore said, Senator George, what's the our committee administrator, Rick Rolian. I'm Peter Courtney, and I live at 2925 Island View Drive North here in Salem, 97303, and I'm a state senator. And that Senate district is District 11 that I represent. That includes portions of Salem and Jervis and Woodburn. I'm here today to speak in favor of Senate Bill 1064-1064. Appreciate very much your willingness to reopen the committee and have a public hearing and potential work session on the measure. A friend of mine brought to my attention the need for this bill. In the past, families that would have a child with developmental disabilities, as we refer to it, would place them in, often place them in state care, and they'd never see the child again, and neither would any of their siblings ever see their brother or sisters again. And in no way do I mean to be pejorative about those decisions. They were made on medical advice. The individuals, the parents, thought they were, what they were doing was best. And it was one of those situations that developed because we're sort of looking at it in the, today, we're looking in the back in the past, and today we're going to try to deal with that in a way with this legislation should you choose to support it. But I do want to make sure that this is not about condemnation or finding fault. It is a situation that has evolved. These children would grow up at what is then called the Fairview Training Center. And for those of us who served in this building for any length of time, and perhaps those who haven't, that became a famous training center. It no longer is open. I think we closed it in way back in 2000, and it was a very controversial decision. And those individuals that were there were moved into what we call community homes, something we now accept. But that was just the way. That in itself was a major political decision made in this building. I was part of it. I remember it was a difficult decision. We wondered if it was the right decision or wrong decision. Again, a very agonizing decision, but one based on facts and evidence and where we had come as a society. This little bill, and it is actually it is a little bill because it takes a small step to achieve a large and important goal. The goal of reuniting families. It is calls on the Oregon Department of Human Services to establish a process to help long-lost family members reconnect. Through this process, family members could contact the Department of Human Services and register their interest in finding a relative. The department then would inform the person with disabilities of the family interest and allow the person to choose, with the help of a guardian or other representative if needed, whether to renew the contact. My testimony is simply words, because the real testimony will come in a few minutes, because I am joined, as you noticed today, at this little table with two individuals, actually three. There are two men here today who can tell you how much it has meant to them to find their sisters. They found their sisters. In Astoria in 1957, when Jeff Daly was six and his sister Molly was three, their parents placed Molly at Fairview. Although Jeff had little information about what happened to Molly, this is his little sister. What happened to his little sister? Didn't know what happened to his little sister. He eventually found her in 2004, living in a Hillsboro group home. In a remarkable family coincidence, Jeff Daly's brother-in-law, Lane DeLoff, also lost contact with his sister, Sherry, when she was placed at Fairview. Well, fast forward, those two individuals are seated beside me today, as is Molly. But their searches could just as easily have gone the other way. As Lane will testify today, his search was difficult and time-consuming because there is no systematic process established within the Department of Human Services to allow renewed family contact to occur. The state must establish a systematic mechanism by which families can reunite, and this little bill, in its own simple way, I hope will start us down that trail. I only asked to serve on one Senate committee. This is the committee I wanted to be on. Because I needed my nurse, the good chair, because I'm very interested in health policy issues, and also because I knew the individuals on it were so well informed in such issues. This little bill coming late in the session is remarkable because I know we have struggled as a committee to do things with the whole health care area. But this one involves something other than the cost issues that we have struggled so much over, to tell you the truth. This involves, well, shall we just say it, gut-wrenching family situations that have developed over years, well-meaning, that will allow a brother and a sister, a sister and a sister, a brother and a brother to find each other, and perhaps, in a small little way, bring a smile to their hearts, and also allow us as a society to say, we're okay, we understand now, and to go forward. So, Madam Chair, I'm really thankful to you and each one of my colleagues who I've served with this session, this committee, for you allowing us to have this little bill. I'd like these two individuals to testify. There is a small DVD called Where's Molly? I don't know if you'll allow it to be shown at some time. It's only about 10 minutes. It's on its way to becoming a rather remarkable documentary. So with that, I've talked long enough. You need to hear now from the families who have been there and are here today, and hopefully I do. As again, thank you very much for allowing me to speak.
Thank you, President Courtney. Well, Mr. Daly, do you want to go first, or does Mr. Deloff want to go first?
Did you have any desire to see the DVD? Or
yes, I think we can go ahead and shall we see that first? Okay.
Why don't we just do that? It won't take long. I really don't think. I think you'll find it interesting, my fellow.
Minutes.
Yeah, I
yes,
think you'll find it interesting, my fellow senators.
Lights. There we go. Popcorn.
I'm Jeff Daly. This is my family story. The pictures that you see of my parents.
The volume up, please.
Life magazine and Look magazine covers. They're perfect. They're good looking. They're skinny. They've got good looking cars.
Where's the volume, please?
Any better for them. When my parents got married, they moved to Seattle for my dad's first job. That's where I was born, in 1951. But we only lived in Seattle for 1 year of my life.
This isn't working.
Then we moved to Astoria, Oregon. Molly Joe was born in 1954, and I had a baby sister.
She was Googling in her playpen. Jeff went dancing around hippity-hop, like young children do. And she just thought that was the funniest thing in the world. Laughed and laughed and laughed.
Now we've lost it.
Let's do this. Let's go to their testimony, and maybe we can correct that. Okay, because I don't want this. This is not where I want it to go. So let's go to your testimony, and we'll do that.
Okay. Molly, have to wait a few minutes to be a star.
Okay. All right, Mr. Daly, go ahead.
Madam Chair, my name is Jeff Daly, and I live at 140 Wilson Way in Larkspur, California. This is Molly Daly. Hey, kid. She's my sister. 48 years ago, Molly was sent to Fairview because she was said to be mentally retarded and could not be raised at our home in Astoria. I'm sure it was the most painful decision my parents ever made, and I know they did it so with doctor's advice. I was 6 when Molly was sent away. She was 9 days shy of her 3rd birthday. For the next 47 years, whenever I asked, "Where's Molly?" I was told to forget about her. There was something wrong with her, and she wouldn't know who I was. My parents died last year within 90 days of each other. I discovered a note in my father's wallet, and it had Molly's name and a phone number on it. 12 hours after his death, we found Molly. Today, Molly lives in a group home in Hillsboro. She has four roommates, and we consider them also our family. Last week, we celebrated Molly's 51st birthday. And on the 4th of July, she will be in Seaside with me, and she will ride in my antique woody wagon in a Seaside 4th of July parade. Senate Bill 1064 can open the door for other people like me to find a lost sibling or a family member. I am Molly's guardian now, but more than that, I am her brother, and I'm so very thankful to have her back into my life. Last week, one of Molly's roommates died. Our loss is huge because we grew to become very dependent and very fond of her. Minutes before she passed, we spent some time with her, and she had family there as well. She wasn't alone in her last moments. Everyone needs family. But there is also urgency in passing this legislation, as many of the individuals who grew up at Fairview are in fragile health due to their disability. Molly will never be alone again. She has me, my wife Cindy, and about 45 assorted relatives that have accepted her into their world. There are 20,000 people in the system just like Molly here in the state of Oregon. We found Molly with a lot of luck. Senate Bill 1064 will change the rules so it will assist siblings to find one another. This bill will help bring family members together with a set process. Family involvement means that more individuals will be looking out for the health and the safety of those who live in group homes. Molly's care providers welcome us with open arms. I'd like to introduce another brother that found a sister, a story very similar to ours. His name is Lane Deloff. He's my brother-in-law. He's my brother-in-law, and his sister was a roommate of my sister in Fairview. After Lane tells you his incredible story, we will open to any questions you might have. We also have Molly's care providers here, who we call her other family. They can answer any questions you might have also about how Molly's life has changed as a result of having a brother and extended family. Thank you for your support. We hope that as a result of SB 1064, many more family members will have and find the same joy and experiences that Molly and I have. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, my name is Lane Deloff.
You want to move?
12564 State Champ Road, Astoria, Oregon. My wife, Claudia, and Jeff's wife, Cindy, are sisters. When I heard that Jeff had lost his father and within hours had found his sister, Molly, it reminded me of something in my past. I also had a sister who was sent to Fairview. Her name was Sherry, and she was a year younger than me. That is the extent of the information I had. As it was with Jeff's family, once my sister was sent to Fairview, she was never to be spoken of again in our family. My wife and I immediately began a search for Sherry, and I took us much longer than the 12-hour it took Jeff to find Molly. It was very difficult, even getting to the point of finding someone who could tell us the process to find my sister. I was told I could write a letter to the state, and if I heard back, that meant Sherry was alive and she wanted to meet me. If I didn't hear back, I would not know what that meant. It could mean that she was no longer living, or that just didn't want to know me. It was very upsetting, but we didn't give up. We continued to make phone calls and inquiries, and eventually we found someone willing to help. It was a wonderful experience finding my sister. We are a family again. I've had many visits with my sister. Sherry also looks forward to that time together as much as I do. Sherry is not the best of health, and my time with her might be short. That is why there is an urgent need for this legislation today. I don't want a brother or a sister to miss the opportunity Jeff and I have had in getting close to our sisters. Jeff and I hope that other brothers and sisters can be reunited as we have. It made our lives whole again. I would greatly appreciate your support of SB 1064 and urge you to move it closer to becoming a law.
Thank you so much. I have a question. You had mentioned that there were 20,000 people. Those 20,000, they do not have family links. Is that what you meant? Or those were how many were actually placed in Fairview?
Well, from what we've understood and from interviews we've been doing with people, that during Fairview's time, 20,000 people were part of Fairview's history during all the years. So we use the numbers to say there could be 20,000 people that were in Fairview that didn't know they had family members or had any contact with them. So it's just sort of a number that grows, and you realize that there are a lot of other people out there other than Lane and I that have a relative that we may want to have contact with.
How long did it take you then, Mr. Deloff, to find your sister? Over what period of time?
It was a solid month of constant phone calls, letters, information stopping, and then we would stall and, you know, where do we go next? So we didn't quit. We used the internet a lot.
Thank you. Are there questions? I would like to know if we're ready to see the...
I just brought both of them up. If you're ready.
Okay, media, wherever you are out there, we're ready to see the show. With sound, please.
You'll have to set the audio levels when it starts.
The unseen force.
I'm Jeff Daly. This is my family story. The pictures that you see of my parents are like Life magazine and Look magazine covers. They're perfect. They're good looking. They're skinny. They've got good looking cars. Life couldn't have been any better for them. When my parents got married, they moved to Seattle for my dad's first job. That's where I was born, in 1951. But we only lived in Seattle for 1 year of my life. Then we moved to Astoria, Oregon. Molly Jo was born in 1954, and I had a baby sister.
She was Googling in her playpen. Jeff went dancing around hippity hop like young children do, and she just thought that was the funniest thing in the world. Laughed, laughed, and laughed. In fact, it was contagious, and we all laughed.
My strongest memory of Molly as a child is a time that I was able to be her brother. It was a cold night. We were at the beach. We were in a small cabin with no heat. And she was crying in the middle of the night. I got up out of bed, brought her to my bed, and I kept her warm for the whole night.
Lying beside you, listening to you breathe. The light that glows inside of you burns inside of me. Cast me not away.
I've got a sister that's growing up. I've got a built-in friend. And one day, she's gone. I'm 6 years old. Where'd she go? Nobody told me. In a great part of their lives in a new town with a new job where every weekend was a cocktail party.
Jack and Sue were in the upper echelon of the group in Astoria. This made them socialites in a sense.
Sue was one of the more capable gals as far as meeting people and being immediate friends.
Sue had such an organized way of thinking. She never did anything that wasn't on her roster. She'd out of the notebook would have probably said, graduate from college, marry Jack, have babies, buy house. That was the way her whole life was planned.
She was compulsive, obsessive about organization, about notes, about having a checklist of when things would be done. But having a daughter that has a slight eye problem and a foot problem just wasn't part of my mother's plan for the perfect life.
I first saw Molly, she was about 2 or so. She was a darling baby.
Big brown eyes. One of them a little askew, but she was the cutest little thing with black hair.
There were doctors that told my parents, she's got a bad eye. She's got a club foot. We think we can fix that, but she's showing some signs of retardation. And you will not be able to take care of her as she grows up. Even until the late 60s, even into the 70s in some cases, doctors would routinely say to a parent of a newly born child with a severe disability, well, you need to deinstitutionalize that child.
People looked down on families that had retarded children.
Coming from fairly well-established families, social significance was very important for my parents.
It was considered almost a stigma. Maybe other people didn't think that, but the people that had the child felt it. And I think this influenced Sue a great deal.
Sue felt it was better to have a complete break. Be done.
In the spring of 1958, Molly Jo Daly was taken to Fairview Hospital in Salem, Oregon, 9 days shy of her 3rd birthday. Molly grew up never knowing her real family. Her home was now called Fairview. It began in 1908 as the Oregon State Institution for the Feeble-Minded.
To me, this is not much different than restrooms in the South that had the 2 doors, and one said whites only, and one said niggers only, crossed out, coloreds only, crossed out, black people. Even though we kept changing the name here, we were still segregating people and isolating them from the rest of the community.
It seemed kind of dark. You do hear screams of pain, you do hear tears, you do hear screams of frustration, you do hear the history of this place.
The doctor said to Sue, don't go visit her, she will be a vegetable all of her life.
When Molly lived here, she didn't say a lot, but she did talk. She demanded a lot of attention, but she was a fun person.
The Molly that I remember was a playful child. I don't understand where vegetable can be a description of my sister.
Keeping your kid at home without support was hard. Sending your kid here and cutting off a relationship was hard. Maybe the latter got easier. I don't know. I don't think so.
As we've gone through the state hospital records, we found that my dad visited. It must have been horrific for my dad and for Molly to have had these brief exchanges where they got to be together and then have to be separated time again till the hospital said, you can't come back. You have to stay away. My parents died within 90 days of one another in 2004. In my father's wallet was a note that led me to ask the question once again, where's Molly? 12 hours after my father's death, I found my sister Molly. I don't know what I'm going to say. I walked in the room. And I think there were 25 people in there that I knew who Molly was. There's Molly. That's my sister.
I think people with disabilities bring a uniqueness and a richness to a community that enriches community life.
I think we just keep needing to learn from people with disabilities. They're the ones that can tell us what they need and how best to deliver those supports and services.
Bringing Molly into the mix has made me understand what love and family is all about.
Come on, here we go. Whee! Yeah!
It's very, very moving. You know, the culture in our society has changed. It was really a stigma back in the 50s and the 60s. You just didn't talk about disability, your children who had disabilities, your children who had mental illness. And we're now becoming much more accepting. We know a whole lot more about how to care for these people who are disabled. And it is so important to have them as part of the family. I'm so glad, President Courtney, that you brought this bill forward, because I know that there are families out there that could be reunited. And maybe this bill will help make that process a little bit easier. Are there questions? All right. Thank you very, very much. And we do have an amendment, so who is going to address the amendment to the bill?
The committee administrators can speak to it.
Okay.
And,
do we have someone? Okay, we'll have Mr. Bacobian explain the amendment, and then if there are questions for mental health.
Thank you, Chair. The Bash 1 amendments are in your packet. The original bill potentially misconstrued that the bill also applied for people who are in mental health or psychiatric types of service delivery systems. And the requesters, as well as the proponents and supporters of the mental health system, wanted to ensure that the bill just specifically addressed developmental disability and the developmental disability service delivery system. So the Dash 1 amendments are, in essence, friendly amendments, and it appears supported by everybody.
All right.
We also have the letter from the GD Council.
Okay. In your packet, also, you have been given a letter from the Developmental Disabilities Coalition, which is telling us why the bill is needed, because there is ambiguity regarding the confidentiality that the state agencies have in reconnecting family members. And so this bill is going to actually make it clearer. Do you wish to speak at all to it?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I just wanted to say that the...
identify yourself.
Catherine White with the Developmental Disabilities Coalition, and we have 26 members that represent providers, families, and individuals with disabilities and strong support. This is an issue that we hear more and more about. We get contacted from families who are seeking to reconnect. We have a generation of parents that are passing away and siblings that are wishing to reconnect with family members. This eliminates any ambiguity, any issues of confidentiality that may arise. This will develop a process that can facilitate that reconnection.
So what had the parents who took their children there then actually signed their rights away, and were their contracts were saying we don't want anyone to know about this child? Is that,
Madam Chair, members of the committee, rarely were there official changes in guardianship. They would make arrangements with the state that they would take care of the individual with disabilities. Some families maintained relationships. Many, many families did not maintain relationships. We have many adults in our developmental disabilities system who have no idea whether they have families or any sort of relationship. Often they do not have guardians.
And right now, all of the people that have been that were in Fairview are now in homes, and are those homes 16 or less group homes, four or five?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, most of the people that moved out of Fairview are living in small group homes throughout the state of Oregon, and usually they're five or less. Many of the individuals who are in Fairview are living independently. They are people who had many more skills because of the issues that Senator Courtney addressed and were seen in the film. There were many people who went to Fairview who really didn't need quite that level of support.
Questions? Thank you very, very much. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1064, and I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 1064.
Madam Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 1064.
Senator Cruz has moved the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 1064. Is there any discussion? Any opposition? So ordered.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 1064 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 1064 to the floor with the due pass with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
And Madam Chair, I just want to thank the President for bringing this. This is a good piece of work. Thank you very much.
Clerk will call the roll.
Senator George?
Aye.
Senator Courtney?
Yes.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Aye.
Senator Morsett?
Aye.
Aye. Senate Bill 1064 is passed. I will go to the floor, and I believe our president will carry the bill. Yes, he will.
He's so modest.
All right. Thank you again to the delays the loss and the...
Dailies.
I was close. So much for coming. And Molly, thank you for coming also. You are very important. Okay. With that, we're going to close the work session on Senate Bill 1064. We're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 503. Okay, which one does this go?
The same.
Okay, yeah. All right.
Okay, Madam Chair, I move the rules be suspended and the vote by which Senate Bill 503 was sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation be reconsidered.
Senator Cruz moves that the rules be suspended and that the vote by which Senate Bill 503 was sent to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation be reconsidered. Is there any discussion? Is there any option? Those of the opinion that the rules be suspended and the vote by which Senate Bill 503 was sent to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation be considered, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. All right. Mr. Bacobian, would you describe the Dash 13 amendments?
Thank you, Chair. And it was sent to you earlier. I have some additional copies here. The Dash 13 amendments, I'll describe them basically how they compare to the Dash 9s. And the Dash 9 amendments were the amendments that the committee originally passed out of committee to the floor, which have come back. Again, Senate Bill 503 has to do with establishing a certificate of need for hospitals, ambulatory surgical centers, imaging centers, especially hospitals. It differs from our current certificate of need program in Oregon in that it also requires, and this is how the Dash 13s differ, it will require that if a new hospital or a new ambulatory surgical center or imaging center is built, they have to first request a certificate of need, and then the bill establishes the criterion under which the CON will be evaluated. The Dash 13s will expand this to note that if a healthcare facility, which is again a hospital surgical center, decides to expand, relocate an existing service, and that threshold is more than $10 million, then they also must request and receive a CON. So again, the difference is this requires not only building but also relocating, expanding. But there's a $10 million threshold. The cost must surpass be $10 million or above. The second difference that the Dash 13s do is that originally the original bill did call for certain programs to be exempt from CON. That included, and if you are page 2 of that bulleted point, number 19, that religious institutions, certain hospice religious institutions, alcohol, drug rehab, mental health treatment facilities were exempt. The dash 13s also include the state hospital. That when and if and should the state hospital be rebuilt, this would also be exempt from the CON requirements. The last change is that the dash 9 amendments did allow certain grandfathering in or exemptions if programs were in process of being built by certain dates. In this case, surgical centers that had submitted an application for license on or after July 1st, 2006. This is now deleted. Instead, there's a new provision that's been added from the Dash 13s that exempts any healthcare facility, whether it be a hospital, surgical center, imaging center, that by June 30th of 2005 has either submitted a completed letter of intent to the Department of Human Services or has applied for a construction, building, or other permit necessary to begin construction. So, if any healthcare facility meets these two criteria, they would be exempt from the CON process if they've done so before that June 30th date. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Bacobian. Colleagues, the reason that we wanted to reconsider this bill is there were many members of the Senate that felt that there was an equity issue here. And the bill that went to the floor originally was primarily having certificate of need focusing on the ambulatory surgical centers, but they felt that hospitals also were building ambulatory surgical centers and expanding, and so we needed to have everything equal across the board. So that was the main reason why this bill was brought back. There's been a lot of conversation regarding, well, we really don't need a certificate of need because let's just let the free market decide what's going to happen. But we have been doing that for the last many years, and all we are seeing is the skyrocketing healthcare costs. There needs to be some regional planning. There needs to be a little bit of discipline. We don't want to go into complete regulation, but if we just let the free market run as it is, it's not helping healthcare costs. Some say the free market systems will help the situation. You can't treat healthcare as a commodity. You truly can't. Healthcare isn't going to work in a free market system, mainly because we have subsidies. We have Medicare that gives subsidies. We have Medicaid that gives subsidies. We have public health. And we also have a utilization system in which everybody wants health care. They're not going to stop wanting health care even though the costs are skyrocketing. And those are the number of reasons why I really feel strongly that there needs to be some kind of planning. And at this point in time, certificate of need is the best option that the state of Oregon has. I would like to know if there are any questions from the committee. I know pretty much where you're standing, but do you need to hear from anyone in particular? Otherwise, Senator Courtney, I would like a motion to move forward.
Okay. Chairman of Senate, I am going to move what have become the dash 13 amendments to Senate Bill 503.
Senator Courtney has moved the dash 13s to Senate Bill 503. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator George?
No.
Senator Courtney?
Yes.
Vice Chair Curry?
No.
Senator Morissette?
Aye.
Chairman Fantasy?
Aye. The dash amendments are now a part of Senate Bill 503. Senator Courtney?
Chair, I'm Senate Bill 503 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Courtney moves Senate Bill 503 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Yes, Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First off, just make sure I'm in the loop this time. I will serve notice of a possible minority report, and guess what? It's already written, so that's going to be easy. know, I guess this is brought back more for political reasons than anything else, and constitutional reasons based on those politics. You know, history has shown that the certificate of need process has been abandoned for some very good reasons, and those reasons are that it doesn't really stop anything. It just adds delay and adds expense on the front end of whatever is going to be done. I mean, that has been demonstrated nationwide, which is why most states have gone away from it, and here we are doing it. And Madam Chair, in all due respect, to say that adding more bureaucracy to health care is somehow going to control cost, I think, is absurd. And that is exactly what this bill does. This is taking the state of Oregon in absolutely the wrong direction. And therefore, I vehemently oppose this bill. And just a pitch for the minority report, because some people don't like it, because it does take all of the strings off of things. But the fact is that the testimony we heard on, in the many hearings we heard on this bill, was that certificate of need indeed was an ineffective tool. And if all we are going to do is delay construction of something, whatever it happens to be, and add front-end expense to that and create more bureaucracy to administer it, we have done nothing positive for health care. And that's what this bill will do. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Morissette.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I do support the certificate of need concept, because it means exactly that, preventing the infringement of facilities upon the territory, the recognized territory of the other facility, based on need. The example that I often use is the Cottage Grove Hospital, which is about 25 miles south of Eugene, Springfield. And that hospital has been protected several times from infringement within a 20-mile radius, simply because they don't need it. So I think the concept is good. The application of the concept can be troubling. I do support, I voted yes. I will look very carefully again at the amendment and how it impacts different kinds of medical facilities, and make a decision at that time in terms of the passage of the bill out of the Senate. But I do think the concept is important, and it has proven effective. Thank you.
Any other comments? I would like to say that there are ambulatory surgical centers that are primarily physician-owned, and they are for-profit. They are the only healthcare facility, a licensed healthcare facility, that does not have to go through a certificate of need at this point in time. But from the ambulatory surgical center's point of view, they say that they provide good competition for the hospitals, and they can do things more efficiently and at less cost. But then I have hospitals telling me that the ambulatory surgical centers are actually hurting the hospitals. In fact, there is a rural hospital in Pendleton that was giving me some statistics since an ambulatory surgical center went up in Pendleton, and their surgeries have decreased significantly. In fact, some physicians now say, if you do not want to have your surgery done in our own ambulatory surgical center, then you need to find another doctor. So I think we need to have an equal playing field here, and so we need to have certificate of need across the board for ambulatory surgical centers as well as for hospitals. And it is a problem, and there is a war between physicians and hospitals on this issue. There's no doubt about it.
Madam Chair, just one more comment. I agree with you on the level playing field, or I think that's appropriate, but creating more government does not get us there. And that's what this bill does.
Yes, Senator George.
Madam Chair, I wasn't going to speak, but I'm thinking back over all of my years, and I've seen great attempts by well-meaning people people to enter into an economy that's as dynamic as ours and try to interfere with it. And the last example was Richard Nixon, I believe, in 73, with catastrophic effect on economy. And I really see, as I'm looking back through all the information we've been provided in testimony, that folks continue to refer to the fact that they are the low-cost provider and they are providing efficient operation. Hospitals are not. And I think that we, if this, the point of this bill is to provide efficiency, I don't think it's going to get there. I think that to allow that dynamic market to operate and to have innovation become such an important part of medical care, those are the things that are going to save us money in the long run.
Yes, Senator Morissette.
Thank you, Madam Chair. An interesting example that Dr. Bates used in Ashland is the presence of four MRI machines within a one-block radius. That's the free market. Now, will that lower costs? No, it will raise costs because everybody has to pay for their MRI machine. So it doesn't make sense. So I think that in some instances, to protect the viability of the system, you do have to implement some rules. And I see this as one of those rules.
Madam Chair, just a comment to that, because I'll go to Senator Westland, who made a comment that when he was in St. Charles and he was wondering why they had so many MRI machines until he needed one, and two were being used, and he was glad the third one was there.
If there's no further discussion, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator George?
No.
Senator Courtney?
Yes.
Vice Chair Cruz?
No.
Senator Morissette?
Aye.
Chair Montaigne?
Aye. Senate Bill 503 is passed, and I will carry the bill.
Do I need to serve notice again, or was that sufficient the first time?
Senator Cruz has served notice of a minority report that's already written.
Okay.
All right. I have a closed work session on Senate Bill 503, and I'd like to open a public hearing on House Bill 2063. Mr. Berkovian, would you bring us up to date on that bill?
Thank you, Senator. House Bill 2063 does clarify terminology in the Family Health Insurance Assistance Program statutes. It does delete an obsolete definition in reference to medical savings accounts. Replaces the term applicant with bidder when referring to the company applying to be a third-party contractor, and corrects statutory references and separates definitions between separate sections of law. And Mr. Rocky King, who's administrator of the program, is present and can provide more information, Senator.
Okay. Mr. King, will you please bring us up to date and whatever cohort you have with you?
Cohort, that's good. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I am Rocky King. I'm the administrator for the Insurance Pool Governing Board, and I've asked Craig Kuhn, who is the program manager for the Family Health Insurance Assistance Program, to be here just in case you ask me a question that I need to field to him. House Bill 2063, and I believe that testimony has been provided to you, is primarily a technical amendment bill that addresses some old language in our statutes and changes some technical terms like applicant from the word bidder, gives the board a little bit more authority in defining the definition of a resident of the state of Oregon for those eligible to enroll in the Family Health Assistance Program so they can stay in step with federal requirements of our Medicaid waiver program. As far as we know, there is no opposition to the bill. There is no fiscal impact. And again, it is primarily technical in that another example is that it does delete references to medical savings accounts, which are no longer something that are allowed under federal law. They're now called medical or
health savings accounts.
Health savings account rather than medical savings accounts. So I can go into detail on the technical changes, but with the instructions that I believe I had was just to give a quick overview.
Okay, any questions on the bill itself? Okay. All righty, and should we talk about this?
Yeah, Madam Chair, if I could.
Yes. Senator Cruz.
There is a Dash 1 amendment. I've had a conversation with Rocky about the Dash 1 amendment. I think what the Dash One is attempting to do with tax credits is an absolutely laudable goal and something we can look at. However, under current structure, there is some problems with it. And what in conversation with Rocky and with Senator Winters, when I walked outside in the first part of the meeting, we think the best approach to this would be for Rocky, in conjunction with Senator Winters, to draft a budget note to go on the FEOP budget bill to work towards this sort of approach. The way it is now, there's a couple disconnects in there that just don't work. We also know that there's some federal legislation moving its way through the system on tax credits that this may apply to. So I like the concept here. I think we were all in agreement that the concept is good. The timing's just a bit off. And so a budget note would allow Rocky the flexibility when federal legislation moves on through to be able to connect to that or to be able to look for alternative ways to achieve this. So with that, we would not want to move forward with the Dash One amendment. We will do it in a budget note instead, and I would say that the bill as it stands is a fine bill and should be passed.
Okay. With that, any other further discussion? I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2063, and I'd like to open a work session on House Bill 2063.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2063 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2063 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator George?
Aye.
Senator Fortney?
Yes.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Aye.
Senator
Winstead? Aye.
Chair
Montana. Aye. Motion carries. And is there someone who would like to carry this? Senator Morissette?
Oh, I'd love to. Thank you. Thank you, sir.
All right. A closed work session on Senate Bill 2063. And I'd like to open a public hearing on House Bill 2064. And again, Rocky King and Lisa Tressel. And would you please briefly describe it, Mr. Bacobian?
Thank you, Chair. This, again, has to do with the Insurance Pool Governing Board, and it does allow applicants of the Family Health Insurance Program to include a dependent elderly relative and dependent disabled children living in their home when it's part of the application and eligibility process for families applying for the benefit subsidy. It also clarifies when income investments are accounted for purposes of determining family eligibility and authorizes Insurance Pool Governing Board to establish residency requirements by rule. And there are Dash 2 amendments, and the proponent is also here to describe those later, Chair. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. King.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, again, my name is Rocky King. I'm the administrator for the Insurance Pool Governing Board. House Bill 2064 basically contains many of the same technical adjustments and changes that 2063, but it has two policy pieces to it that are different that we think are important. The first is, if you have a family, and according to FEOP, Family Health Insurance Assistance Program statutes, if you have a family, you are to count the parents and the children in determining the family size against what their income is to see if they can get a subsidy. Not in that definition are perhaps adults who are dependent upon that family. Elderly adult that comes to live with their son or their daughter aren't counted as a part of that family, and yet they're part of the expense of that family. Also, adult dependent children. For example, a disabled child that's 25 that is living with that family after they're 23, according to our definition, they're not counted. So we want the ability to count dependent adult relatives as well as disabled or dependent children above the age of 23 in trying to figure the family size against what income they have to determine eligibility. We think that's good public public policy, and based on the first bill that you heard today, it really stacks up, I think, well with the intent there. The second change is, from a policy perspective, is that when they established the Family Health Insurance Assistance Program, we said if the adults are going to get coverage and receive a subsidy from the state, then they could only do so if the children had coverage also. We want to put into that eligible children, because if there are children that aren't eligible for any program and thus the family can't afford coverage at that point, we don't want to penalize the adults or other children by not providing that coverage. We do have rules that say as soon as that child becomes eligible for a particular program, that is, maybe it's a residential or residency issue or whatever it may be, that the parents must enroll that child in a health insurance program, whether subsidized or they pay for it themselves, if they want to receive their own subsidy. This will allow some parents and some kids to get into the program that previously had been denied because they had one family member that just couldn't be eligible for a public program. So we think both of those are consumer-friendly and will expand our ability to serve low-income Oregonians.
So if I had an uncle, which I did, who lived with me for 12 years, he was in his 80s, and if I were eligible for FEOP under the rules here, he would be able to also be a dependent, be considered a dependent?
Yes, Madam Chair. He may not be eligible for a subsidy for purchase of health insurance because that would be somebody eligible for Medicare, but he could be used in configuring your family size to determine the eligibility because you're supporting that individual. So if they are a dependent, we want to be able to count them for your eligibility for that.
And as a legislator, with your salary, I'm sure you qualify.
I do, actually.
Minority report.
Not on this one.
Ms. Trussell.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm Lisa Trussell, and I'm with AOI, and I am pleased today to come and testify in support of a bill in this committee.
Ooh.
And that would be House Bill 2064. But particularly, we're supportive of the Dash 2 amendments, and Representative Nolan's here to talk a little bit more about them. But for quite some time, we've been trying to partner in various ways with how we can get more children insured for a variety of reasons, but particularly if you can get, like through the FEOP program or the CHIPS program, if you can get children who are relatively healthy, generally speaking, into a group insurance market, you can, that'll help lower the cost because sometimes in the group market, what you end up with are sick people because of the cost. So if we can get some healthy ones in, and what the Dash 2 amendments would do would be to put a work group together, which is something else that we've been trying to encourage for the last couple of years, specifically directed at the issue of increasing the number of insured children. And although there's a lot of groups working in Oregon, various pieces of the healthcare puzzle, this is one that we're particularly interested in because it actually has employers who pay the premiums for the most part in group health insurance plans as an active partner, so we'd ask your positive consideration.
Representative Nolan, would you like to come up, please?
We have.
Okay. Do you want to just walk through and describe?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I really appreciate the opportunity to bring this to you. The Dash 2 amendment to this bill is designed to get at the issue that Ms. Trussell started to allude to. We have had an embarrassing and almost shameful trend in Oregon in the last several years with respect to access for our children to health insurance in the state. 5 years ago, we were across the state something around the order of 92% of our children were covered by health insurance of one fashion or another, most of it through policies that their working parents had as benefit of their employment. Today, we are providing insurance for only about 87 or 88% of our children. In the last 5 years, about 15,000 children in Oregon have lost health insurance. The experts tell me that most of those children have lost insurance because their parents are working in jobs that are on the edge, if you will, and their employers have had to make a decision of whether to continue to pay their payroll or to provide health insurance. And the children have been the victims of that decision. This bill, or this amendment, does not by itself solve that problem. What it does is it invites to a discussion representatives from businesses that provide health insurance, representatives from insurers, representatives from groups advocating for the welfare and health of children, and public health experts to sit down together and work toward recommendations for joint partnership programs where business and the state together develop ways to reverse that trend and come back and recommend to the legislature very specific ways that we can partner in addressing that problem. I am aware that there are other efforts, as Ms. Tressel has alluded to and as this committee is very aware of, to address and make some recommendations more globally on all of health insurance and health care. And I applaud and support those. We have specifically, in fact, asked legislative counsel to make sure that the effort proposed here does not duplicate anything that is already going on. And, in fact, if the more global look at health insurance and health care access moves forward to the governor's desk, that this would be deleted, that we would not have a whole picture and something looking at children going on simultaneously. But members of the committee and Madam Chair, just on the off chance that we don't get the whole picture addressed, I think it's important that we at least pay attention to ways that we can provide access to health insurance and health care for more of our children. And that's what this amendment is designed to do.
Any questions or comments?
Yes. I like the amendment. I'm concerned about a fiscal impact that might prevent the whole thing from not passing, though. Have you addressed the fiscal impact?
Madam Chair, Senator Morissette, I'll answer that, but I also may ask Rocky King to pitch in as well. I have the same concern, Senator Morissette, and we have structured this in a way, frankly, to take advantage of expertise that already exists. And the task force is designed to be uncompensated, as we've talked with people who might be helping in recruit members. They are aware of that, and they think this is important enough that they are willing to donate their services. I have worked very closely with IPGB, who is asked to help organize this, and with the Office of Health Policy and Research to make sure that this work could be done in a way that takes advantage of work that's already being done and adds truly minimal additional work, mostly in the form of organizing and attending monthly meetings for about 12 months.
Okay. Do you have any comments?
Madam Chair, Senator Morissette, there's two agencies really involved in support of this bill, Bruce Goldberg and the Office of Health Policy and Research, as well as the Insurance Pool Governing Board. Because of our charge around certified plans for small employers and that we're administering now the Children's Group Health Plan, this seems a logical fit in our sense is that we would absorb whatever staff time that we needed to provide. It would be certainly less than a quarter staff time between my agency and then also whatever Bruce had in that. So we don't think there's a large fiscal impact at all. And if the legislature so chooses for us to do that, we would be happy to carry out that task.
I know that we have put a lot
Oh, Senator George. No?
No, I think I'll go ahead. Thank you, Madam Chair. Looking at the governor's appointment of both the chairperson and the vice chair, I'm a little bit concerned about that. And can anyone address how we're going to make sure we have fairness, openness, and balance?
Madam Chair and Senator George, we tried to balance the composition of the task force both from the interests that were represented, perspective that they have, as well as the expertise they bring. And we specifically asked the President of the Senate to make two appointments and the Speaker to make two appointments, as well as relying on the Governor. And the reliance on the Governor for those two presiding positions and the ones who basically set the agenda is not to control the agenda so much as to make certain that it is coordinated with the Office of Health Policy Research and the Oregon Health Policy Commission, because those are both executive branch activities, and we wanted to make sure that we weren't duplicating efforts that are going on in those areas.
Okay. We have put a lot on the plate with the passage of Senate Bill, well, I forget all of the Senate bills that we have passed that we have directed toward IPGB, as well as the Oregon Health Policy Commission. And with the new information that they will now be able to aggregate and they will be able to be developing strategies, I feel, that can address some of these issues. But from a more global perspective, I would be in favor of waiting on this particular amendment with the work that we have already directed the Oregon Health Policy Commission to do, because they are going to be actually have access to more information, which they do not have at this point in time. And I would hate to have a task force working on this particular issue and when we don't have all the information that we're aggregating for other strategies that could be developed. And I hope I'm making some sense here.
Well,
any other comments?
Madam Chair, thank you. I've talked to Representative Nolan about this several times, and I have no reason not to support this at the present time. I have not had an opportunity to talk to Bruce Goldberg or Rocky about this, that it isn't time that this should be carried over to do the bigger picture. I have not had that discussion with them, and so I guess I'm still puzzled why we can't move this.
Yes, but. Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess, Madam Chair, number one, I don't want to jeopardize the bill, because I think the bill is a very good piece of work. Number two, there's so much we already know about who's not insured and why they're not insured. And one of the basics is if the parents aren't insured, the kids aren't going to be. We know that. I mean, that's a reality. And so doing a subset of children, I'm not sure gets us where we want to go. I know there is going to be a significant amount of effort during this interim to look at the healthcare system. And the healthcare system has major problems, and who is insured and who is not insured is clearly a subset of that. And I guess my hope is that we as a body through our interim committee work can be looking at the big picture and not have other groups running off doing subsets of that. So, it's laudable what this is attempting to do. I'm not sure this is the appropriate forum for getting us there.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you. When are we going to look at the big picture? Is that is there a plan for that during this interim, or is that just something there is?
We have one, but you're on a need-to-know basis, Senator. So.
Well, apparently a lot of people are on a need-to-know basis.
No, we did pass Senate Bill 1040 that's going to provide a lot more information to and Senate Bill 819.
Well,
I was trying to think of the different ones that we. Okay. Any other discussion? Is there anyone else on the list? Okay, I'd like to close the public hearing on House Bill 2064, and I'd like to open a work session on House Bill 2064.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2064 to the floor to do pass recommendation.
Is there discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator George?
Aye.
Senator Courtney?
Yes.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Aye. Aye.
Senator Morissette?
Aye.
Chair Montanus?
Aye. Motion carries. And Senator Cruz, would you like to carry this?
Sure.
Okay.
Madam Chair,
yes.
And I'm sorry that Senator or Representative Nolan left, but I think there's a terrible miscommunication when a member of this body comes to us with an amendment and has not been, this hasn't been ironed out beforehand. And I just feel badly that we did have a miscommunication, obviously.
For the record, Senator Nolan and I spent a lot of time working on this, and she knew my stance on this amendment from the beginning. But I said, do you still want to, I wanted her to still be able to address the issue because I feel the issue is very important. So we had talked about it beforehand.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I guess it would also beg the question of why Representative's amendment to a House bill wasn't considered on the House side.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And just for the record, too, Senator Winters had the amendment to 2063, which was laudable, too, and she was very aware that it wouldn't move, but I still wanted the opportunity to be able to discuss that issue here also, so we did. Okay, is there any other business for the day? Meeting adjourned.
Thank you.